I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
Good evening, morning, afternoon, really whenever you're listening to it. It's evening here. Good evening, people of Earth and beyond. And welcome to I Like to Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully.
I'm Stephen Richards.
And thank you, everybody. Our end-of-year episode had really, really great listening numbers, so thank you to everybody for checking that out. Hopefully we pointed you towards some stuff that maybe you haven't seen or helped open up some ideas about the stuff that you have seen. Also, thank you for your patience. We took a little end-of-year, beginning-of-year gap week or two for both this and Hot Property. Just a lot of moving pieces in life right now, but we'll be back on schedule. Starting with this episode, and we'll be back next week with some Hot Property. Anything you want to pop on us before we get started about today's movie, Steven?
Yeah, sorry, I'm also closing apps. tell your friends about this podcast, all right? Because I'm tired of working for a living. That's all I want to say. Tell your friends, like and subscribe, review and rate, all the things that keeps the internet the internet economy booming. Do all those things for us. I'm ready to break through, baby. I'm ready to break through.
And I think our karmic points are in order, because I subscribe to a lot of podcasts that I don't listen to just because people have asked me to do so to help their numbers get up. And I subscribe to podcasts that I do listen to because I would like for them to fall into my feed. But you know, the other day I had a really nice teller at the bank. I forget what their name
Tell
was.
Tell her, I hardly know her.
Ah, well, that's the thing. I'm trying not to be gender specific because I think this person was gender nonconforming in some type of way, but they were extremely sweet. What's up?
Say you saw a teller at the bank again.
I saw a teller at the bank.
Was it Miles?
It could have been. I don't know. It might have been Miles. It might have been males. It might have been females. I don't know. No, but they were so wonderful that when I got the email from my bank that was like, please fill out this survey about your experience. I was like, I never do this. I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start with my bank teller. And ever since then, every single one of those, how was our customer service, click here for a survey, I've gone and filled it out because I was just trying to put some good energy out there in the world. So send it. Yeah. I did that to help the world and also to inspire our listeners to like and subscribe to the show.
I like doing that because I feel like if you go – because it also helps out the common good, because if you go, like, think about a restaurant, for example. If you go to a restaurant and you look at the star ratings, you're relying on people that also had good experiences, not just there to pan them critically.
Yes.
So everyone do your part, sign up, sign in, get it locked in, and let's watch some movies together.
When I go on Yelp to look at some restaurants, I always go for the ones that are around, like, that are actually like between 3.5 and 4 stars, because I never trust a 1-star review. Those typically are more about the reviewer than the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I never trust a 5-star review because that just might, you know, that's one good experience. But
or
the regulars.
Friend going exactly. In there, because I've done that for my friends who have restaurants.
The regulars who went a few times, they hang out in the 3.5 to 4 range. You know, and you get that good mix back. That's what I want in a restaurant. 5 stars feels manufactured. 1 star is obviously unfair. I like those middle of the ground reviews. They tell me everything I need to know.
Yeah.
And you can tell us everything you need to know, everything we need to know at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things. And you can check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things.
And we got merch at tinyurl.com/hotpropshop.
There you go. There you go. So for this week's episode, later we're going to be counting down some of our favorite movies that were directed by former actors or, you know, directors that started in the acting world. And the reason that we're doing that is because today's episode, we're going to be doing the Hulu located film Self-Reliance, which was written and directed by Jake Johnson,
who is everyone's hero Nick Miller in New Girl.
I haven't seen a lot of New Girl. Every clip I've seen is enjoyable. Like, I'm not big on the broadcast sitcoms besides Wings. Just not a, like in a post HBO world. We're not, you know, and I, and my love for Wings is mostly a bit. Although I am watching Seinfeld. I haven't seen a lot of New Girl, but every, what the fuck? Sorry, my computer just did something crazy.
Oh my God, it's happening. Skynet.
It, honestly, I think it is because it was just like, your microphone switched. Whatever. Okay, so every clip I've seen, though, Jake Johnson is very funny, and he seems to always be playing off that other guy. What's that other guy's name?
Max Greenfield.
Max Greenfield. He's funny, too.
He's great.
I should probably watch some more episodes of it. I've actually seen, like, three or four because I've been in situations where it was on and always enjoyed it.
It's one of those, like, kind of – it's not entirely nonlinear, but you can jump in and out at your leisure, I feel like, and understand what's going on. But that's really where Jake Johnson got his start, and that's where most of that cast got their fame because – except for Zooey Deschanel, obviously, who I think is ironic because that show is called New Girl, but – like, Zooey Deschanel is the least funny part of the show. The surrounding cast around her, you know, Jake Johnson, Max Greenfield, Damon Wayans Jr., Hannah Simone, these, all those people are fucking hilarious. Oh, and Lamorne Morris. How can I forget Lamorne Morris?
I love Damon Wayans Jr. He's in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, and he's so fucking funny in it.
I also, if you haven't seen Let's Be Cops, with Jake Johnson and Damon Wayans Jr., it's a it's a really fucking stupid movie, but it's really enjoyable.
I remember when that came out and wanting to see it because, like, that's all I really need is a couple funny people with a decent concept, and they're just pretending to be cops, right?
Yeah,
and exactly. They're drunk. Sold. That's all I need.
Yeah,
but like, I actually don't have much of a connection to Jake Johnson because I didn't watch New Girl, but he's one of those faces that when he pops up, I always go, oh, he's funny. I like him. Like, he pops up in things. And now he's doing a podcast that's like spun off a little bit from The Dollop with Gary Reynolds and or what's it? Gareth.
Garfy.
And, Garfy. And he's one of, like, the funniest people in the world. And so knowing that they're buddies and they do this advice podcast, now I've really come to enjoy Jake Johnson a lot because of having listened to a few episodes of that.
And Gareth takes his usual role as, like, you know, the funny man to Jake Johnson's now reverse role because in New Girl, he was the funny man to Max Greenfield's straight man. And in the podcast, Jake Johnson's a straight man, like, and – actually, really more of a he takes on more of a commoner role, and Gareth is the crazy dude. And I've been listening to that podcast a lot. It's called We're Here to Help. It's really enjoyable. There's not an episode that I've like thought was lagging at all. It's all really interesting stuff. People call in with problems and they help them, which is a really good dynamic.
I gotta say, like, as funny as it is and as sometimes tongue in cheek as they are, I actually find that a lot of, like, wisdom ends up being espoused through the humor in regards to helping with the problems. And, I was very impressed by that. Say that again?
It's also a really good way to, like, kind of get to know them as more than just actors, you know?
Yeah. And so that's honestly why, cause you texted me and you were like, you gotta watch Self-Reliance. It's great. And I had always kind of thought about watching it, but it was listening to the podcast that ultimately, you know, caused me to pull the trigger on it. I was like, you know, this guy's funny. Like, he seems thoughtful enough that for him to write and direct a movie, I feel like I owe it to him to watch. And I'm glad I did. I really liked Self-Reliance.
Now, quick caveat before we get into it. I watched this movie before I knew that we were doing an episode on it. So I didn't have any notes. So I'm going to be kind of riffing off of what you've got and things I remember.
Well, and caveat here, we'll get more into it on Hot Property, but due to like the circumstances of my life right now, Sunday I did a fair amount of crying and I was in my new apartment by myself, with the cat, of course, and feeling and like kind of feeling it. So what I did was I smoked a ton of weed and then I put on Self-Reliance and enjoyed it. And then I watched the first two Terminator movies. So there's a soup going on up here.
Dude.
Of a lot of stuff. And so there might not be a lot of details that I'm going to be able to get, but I do have some notes. But I honestly, you're a big Jake Johnson fan. So I want to start the conversation just by asking you, like, as someone who's like a big fan of his work, like, did this live up to your hopes of what he was going to do with his writer-director debut? It better be his debut if I'm saying debut.
It is his debut. I think that he, I think it's a really good first showing. I think it's a good, let me just make sure. Okay, hang on, wait. He directed an episode of New Girl. Are we counting that?
So feature debut.
Yeah.
And
I think that, you know, like his foray into acting and kind of being on the scene in New Girl and getting a shot as a series lead kind of out of the gate, you know, he did a couple things before then, but, you know, I think that trust that Hollywood has in him to be a leading actor is well put in him being a director as well. I think it's a really good start. Does it have its flaws? Yeah, of course it does. I mean, no one goes out there and swings at the fences and hits a home run for the first time, except for the person who directed my number one film on my list. We'll get to that.
Oh, right on. Yeah. I have a solid list.
But go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this film kind of reminded me, at least in tone, in ambition, and then ultimately in success, as Charlie Day's directorial debut that came out at the beginning of last year called Fool's Paradise.
Yeah.
And it did not open to great reviews. I think you'll like it. And I actually found it to be really charming. And I think it showcased Charlie Day's strengths as a director, or at least his imagination as a director. Like, his great movie is coming down the pipeline, but I am assured that he will make it. And I came out of this feeling the same way about Jake Johnson. Is that, like, there were a lot of moments where I thought visually it really sung. There were a lot of points where it felt flat. And, but I, like, his choice of shots, most notably, I would say, in the cab scene where he's speaking with it's the Christopher Lloyd cameo. There was a lot of shot choices in that, which that could have just been a twofer right there, just static in the car. And instead, the camera cuts around and takes these strange angles of both our lead character and Christopher Lloyd. And I was like, oh, he's taking what should be a simple one shot, just a two-head shot, and actually doing some work here. And I get the sense that even though I liked this movie a lot, I didn't think it was, like, great. But Jake Johnson's got a great movie in him.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that there were certain moments too where the camera, the way it was shot, really lent to the humor. Specifically, there's a really funny moment that I don't think would have been as funny if the camera wasn't on a Dutch angle, where the PA ninja played by Eduardo Franco is like leaning over his bed. It looks so from the composition, like Eduardo Franco's head is parallel with the frame, but Jake Johnson's kind of laying flat on the bed at an angle. And he's like really in his face whispering like, you need to go and talk to somebody at the limo or like something like that. And everybody's whispering through the entire scene. But because it's on that Dutch angle, it makes the scene so much funnier because it causes this like kind of almost faux tension because what they're saying is not very like epic or important. They're just arguing about
they're
whether or not
they're pretty friendly.
Yeah, they need to like they're not arguing, but like they're going back and forth. But like, I don't want to go right now. Like, do I have to go? Yes, you do. Blah blah blah. And like, so the faux fucking tension that angle causes makes that scene so much funnier. And I couldn't stop laughing at it.
I know exactly the shot you're talking about because that was one of the points that I laughed out loud at, and it was simply because it was a shot that perfectly visually captured the feeling of what it must be to be him in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like, oh shit, there's this guy, you know, leaning over me. And I could be killed at any moment. Are these the people that are going to kill me? And then he turns out to be nice, but you're still just like exposed. And the one shot that really made me laugh was similarly when, the ninjas, as they called them, as the lead ninja's talking to him, and he's like, oh yeah, we're everywhere. And he like snaps his fingers and all the ninjas start coming out of the woodwork. But one of them cartwheels slowly into frame. And it's so eerie and unsettling and really keyed to humor. And moments like that are what I'm talking about when I say that I think Jake Johnson's going to make a great movie one day.
Yeah. And so that the lead PA, Eduardo Franco, he was in the latest season of Stranger Things too. And he's one of those guys
that's where I reckon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Eduardo Franco. I want to know his name. I like him.
He's one of those dudes that, like, almost like Biff Whiff, who's also does a great job in this movie. They don't act.
Oh, Santa. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't act. They just exist. And that is enough to put on camera. And so like people like that, while very lucky, they are kind of one note. But they are just hilarious and fun to watch.
Biff Whiff was in last year's Best Picture winner.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I'm not discounting it. Like,
no.
The raw talent to just be able to be yourself on camera and still portray a different character each time. I don't know why, but like this is coming to mind, but like Cheech and Chong made a whole fucking career out of just doing that. Multiple movies, the multiple records, like all that stuff. They're just being themselves. Sect of, you know, every people that is coming out of the woodwork that like, oh, they're just playing themselves, but like I was still like that, like sign me up. I think it's really fun, and also kind of looks like a Biff Whiff.
He's no Brad Pitt.
No.
I will say that I think where this movie was weak for me is I think that the script could have used a couple rewrites, and it played to me, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but I'm saying that it really felt at times like this was maybe conceived as a season of television.
Yeah.
And then we pulled out the highlights and reworked it into a feature-length script. Because, like, the overall arc of it is pretty episodic. And I don't mind that. I think that can work for a movie. You know, I'm a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan, and that's what he does, is episodic. You know, just boom, 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 big ensembles and all that. But as a result, there would be certain points where, like, you know, they, like, for example, he's got what was Biff Whiff's name? James? Something like that? I know he had two names because it turned out to be something else.
James or Walter.
You just started calling me James. Where, like, he's gone for a while. And it seems like there's dialogue kind of scrawled into the margins where it's like, oh no, I got him a hotel room. And they do a little, you know, a little joke about it. And so like, there's just like scenes like that are, you know, they could use a little more glue. And I think a couple rewrites could do it. That said, I would also watch it as a whole season of television because it was a world that I very much enjoyed being in with a cast that I very much enjoyed.
And to that point too, the relationship with Natalie Morales, didn't have as much weight as I think it could have if given a little more time to breathe. And then you have like the Anna Kendrick reveal of, you know, her not really being a part of it. I think that could have hit a little bit harder with more time to kind of manifest.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like there's a 3-episode arc devoted to the time he spends with her.
Yeah.
And we get, you know, just like the middle 35 of the movie. You know?
But that being said, like, and I'll just bring out my heavy hitter point here right now is that the fact that everything really is as it seems is to me a great twist because I was reading the Reddit comments this morning on like the official movie Reddit and everyone's like, oh man, they just wrapped up the ending. What a boring way to do it. I'm like, no, you guys are missing the fucking point. It's genius.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Everybody's expecting the twist. Everybody's expecting Anna Kendrick or her mom to be the killer. Everybody's expecting this dude to be having a psychotic episode. But guess what? It was all real the entire time. And that all this really happened. And the fact that like that is, and it's in and of itself a twist because we're all expecting something to go wrong, I think is just, and that's why I think Jake Johns is really going to nail something great later on, is because he found a way to make me so fucking anxious and on the edge of my seat about, you know, who's like really living through his lens of paranoia and like, is this really real? And like not really knowing, you know, who to trust and all that stuff. Like he does a good job of fostering those emotions within the audience. And the fact that it all kind of pays off, like we're rewarded as the audience for sticking around, I feel like.
I agree, because the whole time I was watching it, when they started to, you know, when his family started accusing him of like, oh, are you sure you're not just losing your mind because of like a breakup and, you know, job loss or whatever it is? And in that moment, I remember having the thought, like, if this turns out to be he's a little nutty and I can't trust, you know, like it's and I like an unreliable narrator. But in this situation, I feel like I would have just been like bored by that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so he's crazy the whole time. So we've done that movie again. Or sad. And like, it is such a feel good, fun movie that I think has a pretty positive message about connection. I agree 100% that it was just like, no, this actually happened. And ultimately, I love the twist of like, he actually won. He did get paid. And, due to conversion rates, we actually don't know if the prize is substantial at all.
But he got to meet Wayne Brady and Andy Samberg.
When Wayne Brady showed up, I was so happy, which is a sentence I've never said. Yeah. I always liked Wayne Brady. He's just not someone who like, who I think about. But when actual Wayne Brady was there, I was like, yeah, get it, girl.
And so I think that the cameos also kind of hurt the Christopher Lloyd situation, because I was like, all right, is that Christopher Lloyd? And then Jake Johnson's character is like, hey, Dad. And I'm like, all right, well, that is a weird transition.
Yeah. So does this world not have Christopher Lloyd, but it does have Andy Samberg? Yeah.
And like also, and this is kind of a Jake Johnson problem, but I did not know his name was Tommy until I looked it up on the IMDb just now.
I didn't know it was Tommy until you said it just now.
Just Jake Johnson.
I mean, you said earlier, like, the background relationship with his ex and all that. Like, I could have used more of just getting to know him.
Yeah.
Because we're kind of thrown into it in day one. Wait, more on that in a second. I have to point out, somebody mentioned on the internet the other day, just to your point about Christopher Lloyd, there's this scene in The Sopranos where they're watching Gilmore Girls. There's also a scene in Gilmore Girls that are when they're watching The Sopranos. So we have to assume that at some point, The Sopranos would be watching Gilmore Girls and then see themselves on the Gilmore Girls TV. And vice versa.
Oh my like, God.
How would that happen? I guess those episodes don't exist in the... But anyway, that's just more
for fun. They're scrubbed because of region.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I guess we have to skip this one, and it's just the somewhere in the St. Elsewhere globe.
Sorry, not available in your country.
Yeah. They're in the same country.
I know. But that particular episode is, sorry, not available in your dimension.
Yeah, sorry, that's in a different multiverse. Sopranos starring Jonathan Majors.
God.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be good. It just would be bad. No, but I think that self-reliance could have benefited more from a little more background about him. Because on the one hand, like, I respect the Run Lola Run of it all, where it's just like, this is how it starts, go. You know, I love a movie that doesn't give me background. But I did find, like, certain emotional developments didn't hit as hard as they could because I didn't really know Jake Johnson's – or Tommy – beyond he was your standard trope of good guy down on his luck, fresh out of a breakup, you know, like that. And it's just, and a guy who's, you know, good looking enough, funny, charming, obviously has been a little fucked up recently. And like, that is the rom-com trope as old as time. And whereas this is a movie that like sort of dips into rom-com territory for a short while. I do wish I knew a little bit more about him.
Yeah, and like especially things like he brings James / Walter to his job, and then later on you find out through dialogue he got fired. But like that would have been a great scene to see.
Oh yeah,
why you're getting fired and yeah. work, you know, to, you know, I guess we skipped over this part, but the point is he has to be around people at all times. Otherwise he'll be murdered.
Well, and if people survives, listen to the show know that we spoil, so they're seeing it.
No, but in case someone hasn't seen the film, I forgot, we should probably set up.
Oh yeah.
What the plot is.
Yeah, it's a reality show on the dark web, which yeah. I love the dark web as a device to just explain any lingering questions you have about the reality of it.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, just like, well, where'd you get that? On the dark web. Cool, no questions asked.
Yeah.
It's good to go. Like, I recently saw that Statham movie, The Beekeeper. You can read my review on scullyvision.com. And one of my favorite things about that is anytime a character doesn't have the information that they need, they just ask another character who's their guy, who just has a nicer suit, who works a little bit higher in the government, and then whatever information is needed, they need. So it's just like, where are we going to find him? I don't have his address. Like, I don't have access to the database. It's like, I think I got a guy. And then they call, and actually the guy was Minnie Driver, and she picks up the phone and is just like, oh yeah, I got that address for you. I can log into my system. Like, and there's, and I kind of love the dark web where it's just like, where did you get an actual dinosaur? Dark web.
Yeah.
All we needed.
They were selling dinosaurs in Jurassic World on the dark web.
Of course, because that's so where you'd go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to Amazon if I want a dinosaur. I'm going to have to go to the dark web. I just don't know how to do it. Is it a Tor browser? I don't understand these things.
I think that the more I thought about it, the Anna Kendrick lie was like really kind of fucked up after you find out that it's real.
Oh, she just kind of made up that she was in the game?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it is kind of fucked up because she
passed afterwards.
She's like sort of playing with his life in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, like, I think that is, did they end up together at the end? Cause now I'm just,
that's
why crossing over with Terminator.
What happened in the movie?
It's crossing over with Terminator. I don't think they got back together at the end. I think he just is supposed to have grown from the experience of having a short-lived romance and having been betrayed. But so there's an example where I think like some background on him would help, because if we knew more of the reason behind his previous breakup, there's thematic material that can be mined from him seeing that through a new perspective via his new relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so instead of feeling like, oh, what does he learn about himself from Anna Kendrick's character besides that life can be fun, which is like your standard stuff. You know, if I knew more about him, they could have really used that to like inspire an actual growth and change or perspective shift in him that, you know, I wouldn't say that it's a mark against the movie in terms of quality, but it's a missed opportunity, which.
So at the end, I had to look it up online because I
no, forgot. It's all good. I hope that you actually heard anything that I just said while you were Googling.
I was listening. I'll go back and listen to the podcast later.
Fair enough.
At the end of the show,
that's such a cop out, you motherfucker. I'll just go listen to the podcast because one, fuck that, and two, no, you won't.
Well, yeah, I want to get our listeners.
Okay, fair enough.
So, how does self-reliance end? With a few days to go, Tommy tries playing out the last few days of the game with James by his side, but the showrunners take him away. That's what you mentioned that earlier. Before the game's end, Tommy has to go last alone. He narrowly escapes. That scene in the warehouse was pretty nutty. I was that like, was something cool. Really fucking sad is about to happen or not.
And I think that's what's so brilliant about the reveal being that it's all real is like in that moment I was like, fuck man, are we about to have like a big mood drop? And then it was like, no, you win. Congrats.
Yeah. The line, what a fucked up game. Like as like the relief waves over him. At the end of Self-Reliance, Tommy gathers up the courage, something he never had with his ex-girlfriend, to knock on that. He concluded, it seems, it's better to live your life to its fullest with those you love. So he knocks on her door, but we never see them back together.
I I will say that, I guess I'll go into light details because I don't need to fucking advertise, but like, so, one of the things that I liked about this movie in terms of like when it hit me is like, I'm very, very recently single. And one of the things that was great about being not single is that I have hermit tendencies, and having another person to pull me out into social situations and not be a hermit sitting and watching three movies in one day, say, watching Self-Reliance reminded me like, oh no, like you're going to want to sit and watch all the Terminator movies today, but you should actually go do stuff, go yeah. out and do things. And, it's so like the message hit home, I think, in a really nice way. And I appreciate that about it. Like, I think that's a really good, clean, simple message. That's just like, no, go and live your life, whatever it may be. Go do that. That's really great.
That's why I recommended it to you, you know, knowing what you're going through. I tried to really keep my recommendations light and you know, not trigger happy, so to speak. And I thought that this kind of threaded the line between like maybe it's got a good message, but it's also pretty light and easy to digest, especially in a time that might be tough, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's a consistently yeah. funny movie. I think that some of the bits don't really land or just kind of like roll over as lukewarm. But I also kind of like that it's not like this could have, when I saw that this was Lonely Island produced, I feared that it might like go so far into the zany that it loses me on the thematic terms.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do really love the Lonely Island's brand of zany. Like Hot Rod is one of my all time favorite comedies ever,
also,
ever, ever.
First Stopping is low key hilarious as well.
It's fantastic. And I have the Steelbook Blu-ray of that because I love that movie so much. And it's nice. A picture of him with the flamethrower. It's wild. But yeah, I think that this actually did find a nice tone where even though it wasn't always laugh out loud funny, and like, I think some of the bits with his sisters didn't quite work because it felt improv'd. And they're all funny. Like I saw what was happening and I recognized that it was funny, but it didn't move me to laugh. But then there was other parts that were just like had me really laughing, and I kind of liked the rhythm of that. It didn't need to be a laugh riot.
Emily Hampshire, one of the sisters, the one from Schitt's Creek, she had me cracking up every time the sisters were on screen.
See, I don't watch any of these shows. Which one was she? Was she
the short hair brunette?
Oh yeah, okay. She was definitely very funny. Yeah.
She like the fact that like the other two sisters were constantly like, oh my god, I can't believe he's doing this, and she's just in the background saying like, I can't wait to see how fucked up this gets. Like that had me
down
every time. Yeah.
That was really funny, yeah.
Fucking.
What is her name again? What's that actress's name?
What?
What is that actress's name? I want to look her up because she was. Say it again.
Emily Hampshire.
Emily Hampshire. Okay.
Like New Hampshire, but Emily.
Yes, but Emily, yeah.
And she's from Canada.
Okay. I thought she was from New Hampshire.
That's all I know about her.
Yeah. She was funny. I liked the idea that she was just kind of down with his, just down with it. Like, yeah, I believe you.
You always have that one sibling that's an instigator, you know, and that's her. But to the Lonely Island produced thing, apparently, and this goes back to your other point too about how this movie was made. You can kind of see the faults in the cracks a little bit. I do think that this obviously wasn't Jake's full vision. I think that
of course
it does seem like focus groups maybe got a hold of it as well. That was my personal opinion, that I could kind of see like, all right, well, they changed this probably because the audiences weren't liking it or whatever. So the ending is really what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And when I listened to the podcast that he has, apparently he's been trying to make this for a long time. And it wasn't until Andy Samberg popped in that this movie had any legs to it at all. And so grateful to them for getting this movie off the ground so we can get Jake Johnson's career off the ground directing. But it's just funny that, and also you could tell from the marketing that the execs probably had their too many hands in this fucking cookie jar, because the way that it was marketed made me think that Andy Samberg had a directly related correlation to the game, but he's just a hired actor, literally, which I thought was actually a funnier bit.
He's just paying his bills.
But I did feel a little bait and switched from the marketing, because I assumed that he was at least partially in the inner workings of how the game worked, but really he was just a paid actor trying to get paid. And, while funny, I don't think that was right for them to market it that way.
Fair enough. I do think that you are right. The trailer did make it seem like it was going to be a little bit more of a broad comedy.
Yeah.
And like it was weird shifting gears, but I do ultimately think that the movie, not being that way makes for a bit of a stronger movie. At least in terms of what I think that this was going for. I would watch the fuck out of the goofy version.
Yeah. There's too many non-creatives in this creative process is my main point.
Yeah. But hey, it got it across the finish line and I'm into it.
And it was a good way to start the year.
What'd you think of the Ellen bit? I didn't get that.
That was the other thing I wanted to bring up. I wish that there was more. That would have been a better bit if it was surrounded by more.
I don't know if I get what they were going for. Like it kind of would have been funny if it was Ellen, but I feel like she would never fucking do it.
It was kind of out of context, and in my mind, it seemed like something that might be kind of an LA inside joke.
Yeah.
You know, like how we have on the East Coast, like the Times Square impersonators. Like, are there LA equivalents of that, that maybe that's what they're riffing on?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not maybe. Sure about on the West Coast. I'm an East Coast asshole for life. But I think
on that one street where all the costume people are, I guess it's Hollywood Boulevard.
I don't know.
And it's mostly just like annoying because you're like, oh my God, there's so many fucking people. Move. Get out of the way, Spider-Man.
If they had done more with, and this is why I think your point about the episodic thing is very spot on. If they had done more interactions with killers, that would have hit more, I think, because you have the context of there are people really after him, but you really only have like the cowboy, the basketball player who has name I forgot because he's Eastern European.
Think about that. Like, imagine if that was a 3-episode arc. Like, I'm thinking like a season of Barry where it's just like 3 episodes each dealing with an ever shifting problem. I feel like this movie's 3 acts could each be expanded into 3 episodes. Cause like 3 episodes of him, facing off with that cowboy and just staying a step ahead of him. You could milk that for so much funny television. And, you know,
Boban Marjanovic.
Bob Marjanovic, okay.
Boban Marjanovic.
Boban. Oh, the guy that John Wick killed with a book.
He was also in the Adam Sandler movie about the Sixers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, no, maybe I'm thinking of a different guy, because there was the one dude that is a Sixer. Maybe it is the same guy. I think it's the same guy.
Hustle, but I
don't know if I'm thinking of the same
guy.
Big Serbian dude, Adam Sandler. Did you see the trailer for that Adam Sandler space movie coming to Netflix?
Dude, I'm going to kill my upstairs neighbors.
What are they doing?
They're just making a lot of fucking noise. Sorry, I had to. They're really annoying the shit out of me right now.
Would it be funny if they were upstairs?
I would just step outside and look up into their windows without jumping or getting a ladder. Because he's almost 9 feet tall. And I would come to the window and say, hey, can you please shut the fuck up? I'm recording a podcast.
I'm picturing, like, you know the shot from King Kong?
Yeah.
It's just King Kong's eye looking in. And they're up there trying to have their tap dancing lesson that they can only have at this time. They paid that money. They really want to learn how to tap dance. They're trying to better themselves, but they can't find the rhythm because their annoying downstairs neighbor is screaming on his podcast.
Yeah. All right. Now that you put it that way, I take that answer. Because they are lovely people. It's just the house's fault that there's so much noise.
Yeah. Dude. I forgot how isolated my old place was in terms of like sound. And like, I have a neighbor that sings, and but like, I pretty much always have headphones on or I'm watching a Terminator. So like, you know, I'm good.
Yeah. Anyway, what were we talking about before I?
We were talking about the Ellen gag, but I was just going through my notes. I honestly don't have much. My notes were the Mario scene was weird, and I actually don't remember what that's in reference to. Do you know what I'm talking about with the note that says the Mario scene was weird? I don't remember a Mario scene. It's gone.
Oh, there was a scene in the hallway of the hotel that they're staying at where one of the killers was dressed like Mario.
That's what it was. Yeah, my only note was the Mario scene is weird. I don't know what I was thinking. The other one I said, cartwheeling ninja was hilarious. That's a good note. Script could use some work. Direction occasionally pops. The Christopher Lloyd scene is a good example. That's all my notes. I think that's probably.
It was a fine film. And it was, you know what it is? It's the perfect January movie.
Yeah, really is.
January movies, we don't hold them to the same standards of the rest of the year. We're all still lazy from the holidays. The Oscars are fucking up again, and we're just watching them be like just the biggest trash can fire that could ever exist. I'm not looking forward to this year. I'm already over it. And this movie is a great January movie because it just bridges the gap between now and waiting for the spring a little bit less.
It's where the beekeeper lives.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, when I put beekeeper up on Rotten Tomatoes, that motherfucker got a tomato.
Really?
That movie rules. It's the dumbest shit you'll ever see. But it is the best. It's the best. Dude, so, and this is mild spoilers for Beekeeper, but I don't think this is any spoilers. Jason Statham is a beekeeper. He works with bees. And he works on a farm owned by Felicia Rashad. And then she gets exploited.
The accent's going off.
Yeah, well, I'm going into omnipresent mode. And then she gets swindled by a bunch of like digital hackers, and they clean out her savings. And as a result, something tragic happens, and now the beekeeper wants revenge. But did you know this guy, who's a literal beekeeper, is also part of an elite force of people called the Beekeepers, who exist on the periphery to keep the world in check?
Yeah.
And the ways in which he kills people are he's so barely a good guy. Because you're like, yeah, fuck these guys who took advantage of Felicia Rashad. But you clearly enjoy killing people.
Yeah, it's like the Equalizer.
You love this. Yeah, the Equalizer movies rule. But at the end, you're like, this guy is not... Like, yeah, he fights for justice. But he also, you know, ties people to like, burning cars and shit.
Do you want to guess which of these January films has a higher Rotten Tomatoes score?
Which? What am I choosing between?
Beekeeper? The Beekeeper.
See, I would give a tomato to both, but it's pretty hard to get a splat from me.
They both have tomatoes, I'll tell you that.
That's good to know. I'm going to say that the Beekeeper is sitting pretty at 82, and I'm going to say that Self-Reliance is at 67.
You have overestimated both ways.
Okay.
The Self-Reliance, the tomato meter review is at 75, while the Beekeeper is at 70.
Okay, however, that feels more correct.
The audience score is much more divided. Self-Reliance with a 63 audience score, and the Beekeeper with a impressive 93 audience score.
Dude, that makes all of the sense. Yeah. Everything about that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And you know, I know why Self-Reliance has 63% audience score. It's because nobody likes the ending because they think that it's just a wrap-up, but they don't see the fucking magic that we do.
Yeah. I think it was a really, really strong choice, and I think that it's a good choice. And, yeah, you know, maybe that's actually the... I think that's how I'll put it. I think that this movie really shines when it makes big choices. And it seems that, like, throughout there's little choices that could have been bigger.
And I'll get to you, the little choices were just a result of somebody telling Jake, we got to dial this one back.
Yeah. Rein it in. Let's be cops for a second.
Yeah.
Rein it in. But you know what? I'm very glad I watched it. I don't think I would have pulled the trigger so quickly had you not recommended it. So thank you for that. It was a good movie. Yeah. But I think it's a good choice for the show because it was just I think the fact that we can devote a whole hour to talking about it is really hard to do for a comedy, which I think speaks to how much more there is to it than just being a simple comedy, even if it's not fully successful in all of its choices.
I agree.
Hey, you know what? Make more movies like this. You know, just like
middle-bunch
shit that can turn around and get some. But, like, it would be cool. You know, like, there's a lot of people at Jake's level of fame, at our buddy Jake's level of fame, that that could use a shot like that. That, you know, we can get a lot of these fun little movies of new filmmakers trying something. I'm into it.
So here's the thing, right? Jake Johnson is known for being a man of the people and responding to things like Instagram messages.
Okay.
So I say we send him this podcast, like, yo, talked about a movie, loved it, hope you enjoy, and see if he responds or anything.
I think we should do it. All right, yeah. When I put it out this week, I'll shoot it from the movie account.
And then he really will be our buddy Jay, because we would have known. Yeah.
He'll say, not only will I give you $1 million to really beef up this podcast, but I think we should all go out and have a beer.
That's tonight. How him and Cameron became friends.
And then we will play Mario Kart, and we'll yell, and we'll have so much fun together, and we'll say mean things, but we'll say them in ways that are cutting, but we know out of love, because we're all close friends. I could see this happening.
If that night were to happen, I would jump off of a bridge at the end of it, because I know that my life's not getting better than that night.
And he would jump with us, because he'd be like, guys, I don't think my life is going to get any better than this.
Because
he's like, no, Jake, you have to stay.
Somewhere along the timeline, we all took a blood oath and a suicide pact.
No, we all jump off of the bridge, and then right before you hit the water, Goron, the King Kong basketball player, grabs you guys midair.
Bobin.
That's you down. Bobin. Goron. Where did that come from?
I thought you were doing another Goldar bit.
No, not Goldar. Although this is the universal sign of Goldar.
Yeah. But that would be even better if we were to jump off the bridge and Goldar swoops in and saves all of us.
Guys, we need you. Rita Repulsa has taken over. Do you want to count down some of our favorite...
Yeah, I got my list up and I'm very excited about it.
All right, let me put these in order. Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I should have done it. Can I pee first?
You can absolutely pee first, and I can either cut this or I can fill it with dead air. Hey, everybody, it's Dan. You'll see that I opted against dead air. I didn't want to do dead air because it was mostly just me ranting and raving. And at that point, I was very tired. I was pretty high and really unable to fill the dead air like I usually can. And it was just not entertaining. So instead, I'm putting in a quick ad here. Just follow the show at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things. You can check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. Thank you to all of the listeners for being supportive, and thank you to the new listeners who popped up to listen to our end of year episode. Had some big numbers on that, and so thank you for everybody who tuned in. Hopefully 2024 is going to be a great year for the show. We've got a lot of fun stuff planned. I'm going to force Steve to watch a lot of weird ass shit, and also thank you for putting up with our little end of year break. Had a lot going on, had to move to a new apartment and all that, so it was just wild, so we had to skip an episode, but we are back on schedule now. Enjoy the rest of the episode, Self-Reliance, at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things. I love you.
I'm back.
Man, I'm so exhausted that I just ran out of juice and just time coded it so that I could cut into a commercial.
Got it. All right, you want to start?
All right, so I'm going to start with an entry. I was lamenting how not diverse my list is. It's pretty straightforward. But number five is a movie that I caught up with recently. I had a little pop. I believe it was mentioned in Tarantino's recent cinema essay book. I forget what it's called. I have not read that yet. But a couple of people I know read it, and then they watched Paradise Alley, I think maybe directorial debut. I don't know. But Sylvester Stallone, after Rocky, made Paradise Alley. And it's a terribly unique movie, but I think it's actually a really good one. It's going to exist in the shadow of Rocky because Rocky is a truly great film. But Paradise Alley is a very ambitious and handsome film that does play on the charms of Stallone, as it were, very well. But I think show a lot of inventiveness as a director. It's a very good movie. I mean, the thing is about Stallone. You count him out, but you can't knock the man out. He has to die. It's the only way. And he just has to create, and whatever form that takes is often good, often bad, but sometimes it's great, but it's always something. And Paradise Alley is like kind of a special movie in that way. And as a big, just proud Stallone fan, it took me forever to watch it, and I can't believe I sat on it for so long. I'm going to revisit it. I loved it.
The quality of Stallone directorial movies really tells a story. You got Paradise Alley, Rocky II, Rocky III, Staying Alive.
Oh, that's the sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
I know it is.
Oh, yeah.
Then Rocky IV, Rocky Balboa, Rambo, the sequel, the 2008.
Yeah.
And then the Expendables 1. So interesting that he didn't direct any of the other 16 Expendables movies. No, but he's in them all.
He's tired, man. Like, you gotta think, that guy's pushing 80. He's literally pushing 80.
Oh, hang on, he's got another directorial project here called Tough As They Come.
I mean, that's a rough title.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, he really is the Rocky story, because Rocky's whole thing is that you just couldn't fucking stop him.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if he looked like a complete fucking dickhead when he was doing it. He was going to do it until he decided to not do it. And he's never going to decide to not do it. And God bless Stallone. And Paradise Alley. Yeah.
And God bless us, everyone. Now, my number five is A Quiet Place, directed by Jim Halpert.
I seriously considered putting that on my list.
I thought when I saw that movie and it opened with a child dying, I was like, oh shit, Jimmy came to play.
Yeah.
And that movie rules. No matter what way you slice it.
The sequel is fucking fantastic too.
The sequel's fucking good, but the first one will always hold a special place in my heart because that one fucking scene where he sacrifices himself just tugs at my heartstrings every time.
He does the sign language to the daughter.
Yeah.
And then,
and
boom!
You know, obviously it's great that he, you know, cast an actual deaf actress for that role, because I don't think he would have gotten that holistic reality without casting someone, you know, who has that.
Apparently he ran a completely fluent set generally.
Yeah.
So that it was like seamless, and it was like not extra work. It was just different work. It was, yeah, mad respect.
Great film.
Dude, I credit that film with, so in Zoolander, Hansel refers to, I think he's referring to Sting, and he says like, oh yeah, I like his music. Well, I don't really like his music. I just respect the fact that he makes music. And I always liked that because that's how I felt about Neil Young. And then A Quiet Place has that wonderful scene where he shares an earbud with Emily Blunt and they listen to Neil Young's Harvest Moon. And they have like a quiet romantic moment just in an earbud. And it's so moving. And that song is so beautiful that now I like actively listen to Neil Young. It like switched that on. I think I gave A Quiet Place on my Letterboxd 5 stars because I think it's just like, that's a really good movie.
It's phenomenal. No matter
how. So fucking good. Hell yeah. My next one is, George Clooney, baby. Good night and good luck.
I
talked about this movie. Really? Why do you hate it?
Okay, but in your defense, I did not see it at the right time and I didn't respect it for what it was and I thought it was like really fucking boring.
It's a talkie movie. It is, but I think that it's in the pantheon of like the good talkie movies. It's what?
Long.
No, it's not.
It's not?
It's like 90 minutes. No, dude, Good Night and Good Luck is a little movie, and that's what I like about it, is it's a talkie movie that's real quick. It almost feels like a Twilight Zone, except without any, like, big twists, and it just has that, like, just that cadence and that energy to it. It is a short movie, and it's really good. David Strathairn's an actor that I never really knew by name until that movie, and now he's the guy that when he shows up, I'm like, fuck, yes. Yeah, good. I mean, I could just as easily say Confessions of a Dangerous Mind in this same slot for Clooney. But yeah, I think that it's what? Hour and a half?
Hour and a half. I might be thinking of Frost
DJ in it. You may be thinking of what?
Frost Nixon.
Frost Nixon's pretty good, though. But I think Good Night and Good Luck is great. Really good stuff. And I was like, oh, well, look at that. George Clooney. He's a triple threat.
And he knows how to make tequila.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Well, because he had that Casamigos.
I haven't kept up with
celebrity. Are you not familiar with the world of celebrity liquors, Dan?
I mean, I know that they exist. It's just something that I don't care about.
Clooney started all that shit.
Really?
Yeah, the Ryan Reynolds.
Four Walls.
Bad, the boys from Always Sunny. They all ripped off the Clooney model.
Dude, comedians that used to be in my circle that like went up to New York and started to blow up, they're all pairing with like beers and pairing with distilleries and making like, you know, just like a signature whiskey or a brew that they can then sell through their podcast and making like a pretty penny, like making a living. It's really fucking cool.
We can have a hot
trickle down. We could totally have a hot property toddy.
Yeah.
I don't know how we'd monetize it.
I hope,
Rob, I hope you're saving your starter dollars. No, we got a decent amount of listeners for movie. We're working on Hot Property at Hot Property Pod. But, yeah, all right, what do you got?
For number 4, Get Out.
Oh, hell yeah.
No, I want you to get out.
Oh, well, all right, this has been I Like to Movie.
By Jordan Peele. When I saw that movie in theaters, I didn't expect it to be such a fucking statement.
Yeah,
but
that's a really good way to say it.
That's because of all of the white guilt that I have in my body. No, I thought it was fucking so well shot. The scene where he gets put to sleep and you find out what's happening, it's one of those great movie moments where you go back and you think about everything leading up to this moment and you're like, oh yeah, I should have fucking seen it. I should have fucking seen it coming.
Yeah.
Lakeith Stanfield, I believe, was my first exposure to him.
Yeah, I think so. Same.
He has the titular line, get out. You know, he tells me gotta run. The scene in the woods where he starts running towards, Daniel Kaluuya and.
Oh, just a quick turn.
Makes a quick turn, scared the shit out of me when I first saw it.
I gave me chills.
Yeah.
That was one that I didn't know what to, like when you said I didn't expect it to be such a statement, that's really the best description because I went at a press screening, but it was open to the public, so it was a very packed crowd, and everyone's like, yeah, we're going to watch a fucking January movie. I don't know if it was January, but it was early in the year movie. And I even remember, like, I went over to my sister's house, and my brother-in-law, he was like, what do you know about this movie, Get Out? And he's like, I don't know what to expect from it. And I was like, yeah, I don't know either. Like, there was this weird buzz, and then it just turned out to, like, it was a crazy experience. The crowd was great. The movie, for me, though, for my money, I would put Us in that slot, because I think Get Out is really good. Oh, I think Us is, like, high art. Ooh, it's good. It's scary.
Yeah. Get Out is as far as I would go with. I didn't even see Nope yet.
Nope is a lot less like a horror movie and a lot more like Jaws, but in the Old West.
Yeah, but I know a monkey gets eviscerated, and that upsets me.
No.
That's what somebody told me.
No, a monkey does a lot of eviscerating.
Oh.
Well, in that case. That movie's nuts, but it's much more like Jaws, where it's an adventure movie. It's got horror elements. Nope is great. You would love it, man. Nope is great.
Right, I'll check it out.
And don't go into it, because I know with your bias against horror, it's very much not that. My number three is The Night of the Hunter, which was directed by Charles Laughton. Charles Laughton was in, he died in 1962. He's born in 1899, so this is an early Hollywood guy. He was in Mutiny on the Bounty, Spartacus, The Private Life of Henry VIII.
Oh, my favorite film.
Witness for the Prosecution, movies in the 50s. And then he directed one movie ever, and it was The Night of the Hunter, and it stars Robert Mitchum, and it's about a hardcore criminal sort of like working his way into a family and taking over. And, it's got a lot of really great style. This is another one that you would like. It's just a really great style. It's a movie that if you watched it, you'd be like, was this made now? And it was made in 1955. The Night of the Hunter is fantastic. It's like got a Criterion and shit. The Night of the Hunter is so good. And Robert Mitchum's scary, but there's so many different images and audio cues and little things in it that when you see it for the first time, you go, oh, that's what they were referencing. Oh, that's what they're like. This movie has such a profound stamp on the way that movies look and are, and certain like little actual like bits of memeography come out of it. I watched it and I was like exhausted, like, oh, that. Okay. And like so much came from it in terms of just like mimetic film language. It's a great movie, The Night of the Hunter.
I love when context is filled in for something that you've taken for granted your entire life. You're like, oh shit, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. Remember back before we had phones when you just had to do that?
Yeah.
Like you would just be like, oh man, I wonder like the dumbest shit. Be like, oh, I wonder how much food I should feed a cat in a day. Well, I guess one day I'll find out.
Thank God we learned about the Dewey Decimal System so I could find this information.
There was a comedian that used to do a bit about that where he was like, before we had phones, we had to be like, I wonder where Tom Petty was born. And then like, you just had to just not know. then one day you'd be like, someone would be like, you know, Tom Petty was born in Kentucky or whatever. And you'd be like, oh, I always wanted to know that. He's like, but now you would go, where was Tom Petty born? You'd look it up and you go, oh, okay. And then you put your phone away and someone would go, well, where was Tom Petty born? You'd be like, oh, I don't know.
I was on Instagram the entire time.
Oh, I didn't retain it at all. My brain doesn't do that anymore.
And that distills down to you go to look at your phone to see what time it is and then look at it and then put your phone away and not clock what time it is.
No, I'll do that where I like get up in the morning. I look at the weather and I go, okay, I got to dress, you know, boom. And then I go, I retained nothing. I have to look at the weather app again.
My number three movie is by an actor by the name of Daniel DeVito, and it is Matilda.
Oh, good choice. That movie rules, dude.
Was a very influential film to my childhood insofar as when I saw it, I couldn't wait for my powers to manifest. They never did, but I was really hoping that they would. And that mixed with, you know, the X-Men, I was like, I'm going to have powers at some point. And I'm 36 now, still don't have them. I'm ready, though, in case they start, manifesting now. It also I didn't eat chocolate cake for like 5 years after I saw that movie.
That's hilarious. Yes. Yeah, it makes sense. So
disgusting to me. Like, and I know that's the point. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Boy,
it just seems so silly now.
Yeah.
But as a kid, it like fucks you up. Yeah.
And I like how the fact that like it's shot with a lot of like when you're in the point of view of a child or Matilda herself, it's shot with a fisheye lens, which is how I like to imagine Danny DeVito himself sees the world.
He's so little. And you see pictures of him just like, of like they were all at the Emmys together, which McElhenney, Emmy winner now.
Yeah. But not for what we thought he would win for.
Not even nominated. No, but Danny DeVito, it looks so little. Like he looks like they took a normal man and then they clipped him out and like shrunk him in Photoshop and then pasted him back on. He's so really little.
He's very small.
I love that he is such a pure, like when Danny DeVito dies, that's going to shake the world because there is nobody on the planet who does not love him with all of their heart.
Oh yeah, for sure. And because he's, and like, there's one story that I think about a lot that Charlie Day told on like a late night show where he was like, Danny was telling him like some parties from the 80s. He's like, yeah, you know, one time me and Schwarzenegger went to this big party and they had everybody's names spelled out in cocaine. And Arnold was like, look how long my name is. And I'm like, Danny DeVito shouldn't be doing any amount of cocaine. He's too little.
That's really fucking funny.
Yeah, dude. And Charlie does a great Danny DeVito impression because they've been working together for 16 years now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they have the same bond that Frank and Charlie have. Yeah. They're like weirdly connected because they're the same guy a little bit. Yeah. Danny DeVito, like he made Death to Smoochie, Throw Mama from the Train. I think he directed that. But then he's also in like serious shit. Like he's in Hoffa and he's in Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up with Taxi, a precursor to Wings, both in the technology and in the format. Yeah, he did a duplex, underrated Ben Stiller, Drew Barrymore comedy. It's very dark. But I think Matilda is definitely.
The War of Roses, Hoffa, Matilda, Death of Smoochie, Duplex,
Terms of Endearment, The English Patient.
Yeah, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
The Wizard of Oz.
And The Wiz.
Citizen Kane.
And The Wizard with Fred Savage.
Citizen Kane, written and directed by Daniel DeVito.
What's your number two?
My number two is, all right, so you knew him as Meathead on All in the Family, but now Rob Reiner is going to scare the shit out of you with Misery.
He directed that movie?
Oh, yeah. He's a great filmmaker, man. He's
oh, yeah, I knew that.
Fucking banging.
Ghostbusters.
He didn't do Ghostbusters. That was John Landis. Oh, not John Landis. Sorry, it's Ivan Reitman. But,
He did
Rob Reiner?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that's how that works. I don't think he did the Ghostbusters. But he did do Misery.
Yeah, right here. It says Ghostbusters. It's a totally different page, but it says
Ghostbusters. You can make Rob Reiner direct anything.com?
He directed A Few Good Men.
Yeah, he directed A Few Good Men.
Yeah, episode.
Yeah, and we also way back did an episode on Misery. Misery is what got Kathy Bates her Oscar, very well deserved. It is a fantastic adaptation of what might be my second favorite Stephen King book that I've read, and it's just such a phenomenal story done well. And Rob Reiner, I believe he did like a run of bangers, like back to back to back. And Misery was a part of it. But, I mean, I could talk until I'm blue in the face.
It was Stand By Me, Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, and A Few Good Men, all in sequential order.
Yeah.
And then he also did North, which I liked. That movie rules to me. North.
I didn't see that one. That movie Roger Ebert famously hated.
What?
Roger Ebert famously hated North.
Yeah, nobody likes the movie except for me.
I've never seen it.
Library. And then The American President, which also got pretty good acclaim.
I haven't seen that one either. But yeah, but I mean, Misery just completely, that movie fucks. It fucks all of the asses. It's incredible.
Rob Reiner, full circle, also plays Zooey Deschanel's dad in New Girl.
Well, there you go. When I mentioned to you guys that I was listening to a JFK podcast with a character named Dr. Mantic, and I always want them to say Mantis Toboggan, like Danny DeVito, it was because I was listening to a podcast that was by Rob Reiner. But Misery. So, all right, what's your number two?
Pitch Perfect, directed by Elizabeth Banks.
Nice. Did she do the first one?
Yeah, I think okay. So. God, I hope so. I know she did Pitch Perfect, too.
I mean, I really liked her Charlie's Angels, and even though I didn't, like, love Cocaine Bear, I'm very glad she got that across the finish line.
I fucked up.
That's okay, I think.
Perfect 2, directed by Elizabeth Banks. Either way, Elizabeth Banks' presence on this film is definitely felt, because she's great. And the music is fucking phenomenal. And even though I can't in my mind right now discern Pitch Perfect 1 from Pitch Perfect 2, let's just put the Pitch Perfect universe in this 2 slot, because every song's a fucking banger. And I would be lying to you if I didn't say that I haven't had it on my Spotify playlist a few times over the past couple of years.
I know you're not alone. I'm like a complete stranger to the Pitch Perfect universe. I don't know the songs. I've never seen them. It's all funny people. I would totally watch it.
Yeah.
I have no shape for it in my
head.
I remember the cup thing. Was that a thing?
Yeah, that was the thing.
I remember that being like a meme for a while, is the people stacking cups and that's fun. That was cool.
If you love tapping your toe and banging your head, you'll like the Pitch Perfect movies.
That's like two of my three favorite things. The third one's mozzarella sticks.
Yeah.
Tapping my toe, mozzarella sticks. And then banging my head.
Fred Willard, RIP, also in the film. Him and Elizabeth Banks are like the commentators for the big competition that goes
Perfect.
On.
They
work so well together. It's awesome.
He's so fun. I mean, he's the all-time greatest commentator in anything in Best in Show.
Yep.
Best in Show.
Yeah, it's Best in Show, yeah.
Yeah. I get those all run together in my head. Ah, oh, man, that's such a good movie. All right, what are we at, number one?
Number one.
Okay, so one of the stars of a fantastic movie that also had a previous episode, Mysterious Skin, was an actor named Brady Corbett. He was in, like, the remake of, Michael Haneke movie, Funny Games. He's like a good, like, creepy guy actor. And then a couple years back, he wrote and directed my favorite film of, I believe, 2019, Vox Lux. And Vox Lux.
That was a Lady Gaga, not parody, but.
It's completely different than you expect. It is. It's like he directs the hell out of it. It has like weird narration by Willem Dafoe, who's not otherwise in the movie. Very stark, beautiful photography. And it's about a girl who survives a school shooting, writes a song about it, goes viral, and becomes a pop star. And then in the second half of the movie, it's her as an adult, played by Natalie Portman, and her daughter is played by the girl who played her as a young woman at the beginning. And it's wild. And it's just, that's the music insane. Is fantastic. The music's by Sia. I've learned it 100 times and I always forget. Sia. And yeah, music by Sia, it's fantastic. And it's really performed by Natalie Portman and, oh, what is this actress's name? I don't want to not shout her out because she's so good in it. But Vox Lux is like criminally underseen. And really, really fucking good. Like it's why I go to the movies. It's one of those, like, it's everything.
It's been close to me
Raffi Cassidy is her name. Raffi Cassidy. Oh, it's got like Christopher Abbott in it. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've been watching that a few times, but it seems really intense. Which I assume right. now that you've validated that?
It's really intense for the first like couple minutes, but then I don't know, it like it finds a good groove. Like it's funky, it's weird, it feels you know, it just has an edge to it that I haven't seen really in any other movies. But it's really smart, it's pretty funny. And everybody's, I mean, Natalie Portman's never not the best thing. She's just ungodly good. And she's ungodly good here. And, yeah, it's just wild. Highly recommend. And that is like, you know, I barely knew the guy as an actor. And then I saw that movie. I was like, oh shit, he's the real fucking deal. This dude's tapped in.
The prequels and Garden State ruined Natalie Portman for me.
I don't know if those are entirely her fault.
They're not, and it's really unfair for me to feel this way, but because it happened in such a formative year of my childhood, I'm sorry, Natalie Portman.
And you didn't get Leon the Professional in there?
What?
You didn't get Leon the Professional in there when you were younger? And then, no, not
college, actually.
You should watch May December on Netflix. It is, it's insane, and Natalie Portman is fantastic in it. I actually think to recommend a filmmaker who you should love, Todd Haynes, that you probably don't know his name until right now, May December will blow your mind.
It's on my list.
Yeah, you should definitely watch it.
What's
your onesie?
Benjamin Affleck's Gone Baby Gone.
Right on.
Yeah, Gone Baby Gone.
If you said The Town, I was going to scoff a little, even though I love The Town.
I mean, who doesn't love The Town? The Town is like The Departed, if you can't access The Departed. Like, that's basically what you're doing. If you can't find your DVD copy of The Departed, or if it's in a different case because you didn't put it back, you lazy fuck, but The Town is right there, it's the same fucking experience. You'll be okay. But no, Gone Baby Gone was a movie that was so good that it got me back into reading in a time where like I wasn't reading a lot. As you can tell, as you know me, that's cyclical when you look back at my life. But it did get me back into the reading motif, because as soon as the movie was over, it was so fucking good that I had to read the source material. And then I went down a Dennis Lehane rabbit hole where I was reading like Mystic River and The Day Before and like all this other shit. But the movie itself was so well done from A to Z in both casting, acting, directing, screenplay, screen adaptation. And the twist at the end was something I never thought coming.
Yeah.
And movies like that automatically get bumped up in points because I'm not that easy to fool, having watched a lot of movies. Ed Harris plays a phenomenal reluctant villain role. Casey Affleck and Michelle Monaghan have such great chemistry as a married, divorced, on-again, off-again, romantic, but also detective partners. Which is a very complicated relationship, and the fact that they were able to show us that in such a short amount of time is a masterclass in how to develop character.
Oh yeah. I honestly have only seen it once, and I remember shades of it, but I do remember the aspect of like of you know, their interplay. And yeah, she was so good in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I wish I saw her in more. Like, I wish she was in more things now. I feel like I don't see Michelle Monaghan as much.
She's coming back in Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part 2. I guarantee it.
She goddamn well better.
Yeah,
she goddamn well better. Yeah, I never read it in Lehane.
That role though, I feel like they could have, especially in Fallout, they could have given her more of a. I guess maybe they couldn't have. They really did what they could.
The thing is, she's not the problem here. The problem is you can't do this movie without Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise is distinctly asexual on all fronts. His ability to be a sexual presence on screen disappeared a couple decades ago, and it never came back.
Because
that's not what we want from him anymore.
You know he can't kiss because of the tooth is blocking his tongue from accessing your mouth.
Yeah, man.
I every time I point that out, because you've ruined it for me by saying that, by the way. So this is,
he's gotten it a little fixed.
All of the people who I've affected now are your grandchildren as far as this goes, because you ruined it for me and now I ruin it for anybody I can point it out to. And now that's our entire audience. Look at a photo of Tom Cruise on the internet and notice for the rest of your life that his tooth
middle is tooth.
The center of his mouth. And it's fucking weird.
Little tooth.
Yeah.
Somebody told this one to me, and I think I've probably said it on the air, and it's the same sort of thing of, like, as soon as I say it, you're not going to be able to unthink it. I don't think that this is as noticeable as the middle tooth, although his middle tooth, I think, has shifted. He's done something for it. But somebody pointed out that Chris Pratt sounds like Crisp Rat. And now I can't untangle that from his name.
I thought I was alone in this one, yeah, but I'm
Chris Pratt. And I like Chris Pratt. I didn't jump on the hate train. I don't know anything about him, but he's enjoyable in things. And Crisp Rat.
Hey, if Arnold can stand him, I think we have a lot to learn about what you can tolerate, you know?
Dude, be useful. I listened to a whole fucking audiobook of Arnold Schwarzenegger over the last couple weeks. And it's all read by him. And, like, it's so funny because, like, you can tell he's, like, riffing and doing stuff over top of the text of the book because it's his audiobook. But you can also tell that there's probably parts where, like, a producer was, like, cut. And they were like, Arnold, you have to stop talking about weightlifting. We need to get this back in. But it ended up being an ultimately pretty inspiring read, because when you think about Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, his career is literally impossible, but he pulled it off.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just like he pulled off another episode of I Like to Movie.
I'm raising the roof. It's an audio podcast, but I assure you, I'm raising the roof.
Raising the roof, I can confirm.
Yep. I'm raising the roof. No, I'm just so fucking tired.
Yeah.
But, that was good, man. So yeah, Self-Reliance, even if you hadn't watched it and we spoiled it for you, you should still watch it on Hulu, because it is a lot of fun, and it's like 30 minutes long.
Yeah. Order a pizza, stay inside, watch the movie. Our buddy Jake will thank you, personally. Yeah. Maybe.
And we thank you, Jake. Reach out. Say hi to your mother for me.
Jake, we're waiting for the call.
He's like, my mother is dead. Oh, no, I blew it.
Oh, God.
I blew my friendship with Jake Johnson. And then he's like, nah, bro, I know that you were just joking. I can take a joke. I love you, man. And then we high five and then hold hands. Well, you can follow the show as per usual at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things. You can check out my website at scullyvision.com. Next week, we will be back on Hot Property. And then the week after that, we'll be back on here doing something or other. We'll put that in the social medias, and then you can follow up.
Hopefully, we'll be talking to Jake Johnson.
Yeah, we'll be back. Let's just put it out there. We'll be back in a couple weeks with Jake Johnson, who we haven't even contacted yet, but he felt us saying his name on the ether of just the energy of the world, and he already knows.
A courier just dropped off a signed contract, so I think we're going to be good.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
And that courier, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
We know we got there.
Deep.
We paid a premium for that rush. Do you have anything you would like to plug?
No, I don't.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's been Movie Movie.
Every movie's directed by RobReiner.com.
You have to buy it now, dude.
All right. Take us out. What is the end?
All right. Yeah, it's just that was Movie Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.